Hey everybody, thank you for tuning in to New Life Podcast. Get ready for Pastor Dave Dolan to deliver a spirit-filled message centered in God's Word.
Well, praise God everybody. Great to be in the house of God. Great to experience another day. The blessings of God are always rich. They can surpass anything that is transpiring in your life. I had a gentleman in my office a couple of weeks ago, and he was so proud that he had been delivered from this drug addiction for 30 days. So here's what I told him. I said, man, that's incredible. But the temptation, it will return. So my question is this. What do you have that is more powerful in your life than the addiction that you had to drugs? And he stopped and looked at me. I said, unless Jesus Christ becomes the component that is the center of your life and the absolute Lord of your life, because he has power over everything, then you're going to find yourself in a dilemma, struggling again, because willpower will not bring success. But God power can help you overcome everything in life. We are in our series, Ghosts of Christmas Past, and the first week we dealt with offenses. And here's what we embraced. Life is too short, and the call of God upon us is too great to live our life offended. So that when offenses come, we're going to raise the level of our soul so high that offense cannot reach it. Last week we dealt with shame, and we learned that we are not identified by what we did in the past, and we will not allow something that we did and the guilt of that to become our identity. Because what we are not in this world, we become in Christ Jesus. So our identity comes from him. What we want to deal with this morning is this. There are labels that people place upon you, and there are self-imposed labels that we embrace. The power of words is very significant. What people speak to us, what we speak over ourselves, what is pressed upon us, how we define who we are in our own personal conversation, over what we did or what we did not do, words can help us or words can hinder us. Words can heal, they can create, they can shape, they can motivate, or they can hurt, they can wound, they can discourage, and they can destroy. Some would say, well, it's just words, and those are words that I've always spoken, but words have the power to change, to transform, or diminish somebody's own personal view of themselves. The old little chorus that we used to sing, sticks and stones can break our bones, but words can never hurt us, is a lie. Because words can damage us deeply and more severely than what a stone or a stick thrown at us may accomplish. Because words have a tendency to linger in the atmosphere of our own thinking and of our mind. And words have the power and the potential to control your life. James was very clear about it. He said, a horse can be directed by a bridle in its mouth. A large ship can navigate a storm by a rudder. And he goes on to say that the tongue is the same component as a rudder and a bridle. The things that we speak can determine our destiny, or they can keep us confined in the past and overwhelmed by the words that have been spoken to us or words that we speak over ourselves. In Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 21, the tongue can bring death or life. Those who love to talk will reap the consequences. How many of you know somebody? They may be sitting next to you. They may be in the building. They may not be close. It could be in your family. It could be at the coffee shop. It could be on the job. And they just love to talk. And they talk. And they talk. I was in a meeting the other night. of leaders in this community, and I decided that I was just going to be quiet and listen. And as I listened to the conversation that took place, everybody in that meeting felt a necessity to say what they wanted to say. And a meeting that should have lasted 30 minutes lasted an hour and a half. How many of you know I'm not very patient with that? So I begin to do this, and my knee is tapping because I'm exhausted of the weariness of the talk that has no substance. And it was a scenario where people just wanted to emit their opinion, and some of their opinions had nothing to do in relevancy with what we were there to discuss. So they asked me, "Why aren't you saying anything?" I said, "I have nothing to contribute to the direction of this conversation. However, if you want to redirect the conversation to the purpose for which we gathered, I have something to say." Therein, the meeting was finished. And so we all know people that love to talk, but the more they talk, sometimes their words are unbridled. And they begin to say things about themselves and say things about other people, or begin to make remarks about a community or a gathering that really have no substance and have no ability legitimately to change everything. Sometimes we struggle with internalizing words that we've spoken that we're not even aware of, because we just believe that that's just the way we are, and we don't understand the power of the words that we speak. Sometimes we internalize words that have been spoken to us, and they become labels that brand our character and brand our direction. Sometimes maybe somebody has belittled you or said something or done something, and all of a sudden you feel guilt and regret, and you take that on as a part of your identity. And what we hear externally, we begin to internalize, and it directs our life. And then we go, "Well, I'm doing pretty well, but what could you do, and what could you be, and what could you become if you would be careful, little tongue, what you say? For the Father up above is looking down in love, so be careful, little tongue, what you say." Sometimes it's just good to say nothing. But people that are insecure have a difficult time not saying anything. Have you ever had something said to you and you were loaded? Your guns were loaded. You had plenty that you could say. But my question is this: is that battle worth winning? Do you need to respond? Do you need to make a statement to retaliate what they said? If what they said is not true, why do you feel a necessity to respond? Oh, to correct them. Probably what you say in response to them will not change their life. They may become angry at you, and if they would watch your life, the integrity of your own life and the choices and the decisions, where you go, what you do, how you handle yourself, has a bigger voice than a word that you might speak to respond to the word that they're marking on your life that's not relevant and it's not true. Somebody said good word. Well, thank you. Because there might be an element of truth in what they say, but the devil likes to take what people say about you and to you and cause you to exaggerate that. Maybe you do have a temper and an anger that is exercised more often than what you would prefer. Maybe when they called you lazy, you do lack some element of motivation. So we have to navigate all of that, and we have to strategize that and say, how do we get through that? Maybe they have said to you, you're just average. Can I just tell you today, if you're within the sound of my voice, you are not average. By the very fact of truth that you have opened your heart to the Lordship of Jesus Christ immediately removes you from being average to supernatural. Maybe somebody has said something to you about, well, you're just too sensitive. And maybe there is an element of truth to that. Maybe you overreact and overrespond to everything that everybody says to you. Maybe they have said to you, you're just annoying. And then instead of taking that and going, Lord, is that really true? We isolate ourselves and we just want to eat worms and die. We buy 2 dozen Krispy Kreme donuts with 4 mocha lattes and we decide, I'm just going to shoot the diet all to heck. They think I'm annoying. But when is the last time that you made a decision to allow somebody else in this planet to rule and control your life? If Jesus Christ is Lord of your life, then why are we more concerned about measuring our life against the biblical pattern that he gave us? Even Jesus was called the illegitimate bastard son of Mary. They called him a false prophet. They called him the prince of the devils. He didn't go back to his carpenter's shop and abandon the call of God on his life. He did not just give up and quit. When that happened, he moved into the power of the Spirit and began to perform more miracles. Can I promise you today that if you will take the labels that people try to place upon you and go, that has no legitimacy for me. I am a child of God. I'm the righteousness of God in Jesus Christ. I'm the head and not the tail. I'm above and not beneath. And I'm going to walk in the power of the Spirit because that's what I am called to do and to become. We allow what other people mark us with labels. Dwayne Dyer said this, every label that you embrace and allow to be applied to your life becomes a boundary that you will never cross. So are you going to allow people that label you or speak particular words to you to have control over your life? Maybe you came from a broken, divided home. Maybe you came from a dysfunctional home. When I was growing up, the word dysfunctional was not even a word that we utilized. I came from the Ozzie and Harriet generation. Some of you don't know what that is. Look it up on TV Land. You know, everything was perfect. There really wasn't a lot of challenges there. And Harriet stayed at home. She cooked all day, and she was in her best, finest. Her hair was made. Her makeup was put on. Okay, and her husband came home, and dinner was set at the table. Some of you are looking at me like, Mike, is that really a period of time in life that people operated that way? And so maybe you came from a dysfunctional home, but just because that was how it was does not mean that's how it has to be. Because God's power is bigger than your past. And God's grace is more strong than anything that you have ever done or any label that has ever been placed upon you. I want to take you back to the 35th chapter of the book of Genesis. Jacob, who was an incredible young man, he had deceived his brother Esau and got the birthright. He wasn't the firstborn. He didn't have ownership to it, but he deceived Esau with a can of beans, and Esau gave him the birthright, and his mother was in on the deception. And so let me just fast forward, because Jacob is on the run. He spends an enormous amount of time at a man's house called Laban. Laban had 2 daughters, Rachel and Leah. And when Jacob saw Rachel, he had one of those enormous emotional moments, wanted to marry her. Laban began to negotiate with him and say, if you want to marry my daughter, Rachel, we have a custom in our culture. You need to work 7 years. Now, Rachel must have really been a beauty because Jacob was willing to work for 7 years. How many of you gentlemen would be willing to work industriously for your future father-in-law for 7 years for your spouse? Well, I'm just asking. Now would be a great time to just say yes, even if it's not true. You could gain some great points this week. So he works for 7 years. The day comes when he is waiting at the altar, and he thinks Rachel is coming down the aisle. Little does he know that Laban has deceived him. Jacob means deceiver or conniver. And now Jacob is starting to reap what he has sown, and everything that he has been in deception is now coming back to him. And so they go through the ceremony. They wake up the next morning, and lo and behold, he's with Leah, not Rachel. Now, the Bible says in the King James that Leah was weak-eyed. The Hebrew says she had a good personality. Anybody ever tried to set you up on a date and say, listen, you need to meet this young lady. Well, what does she look like? Well, she has a great personality. How many of you know what that means? There's an inference there. And so Jacob is overwhelmed, but Leah is very productive. And this is not my assignment, but sometimes the things that we don't like, the things that are struggling in our life to embrace, they're the most fruitful. So he returns to Laban and says, Laban, you've deceived me. And Laban has this dialogue and says, well, in our culture, it's our custom to give the firstborn to marriage, and Leah is the firstborn. And so Laban says this, if you want to marry Rachel, then it's important that you work another 7 years. Read Genesis 29. Now he has 14 years invested before he has ever put a ring on Rachel's hand. Help me, somebody. It's not an anniversary. They're not even married yet. Rachel has a firstborn. His name is Joseph. And in the 35th chapter of the book of Genesis, in verse 16, we read this scenario because the birth of her second son is quite traumatic. Leaving Bethel, Jacob and his clan moved on toward Ephrathah, but Rachel went into labor while they were still some distance away. Her labor pains were intense. After a very hard delivery, the midwife finally exclaimed, "Don't be afraid, you have another son." This is what overwhelms me, this next verse. You got to remember that Jacob has worked 14 years for Rachel. Rachel was about to die, but with her last breath, she named the baby Ben-Oni, which means son of my sorrow. The baby's father, however, called him Benjamin, which means son of my right hand. I understand that Rachel was at a moment in her life. She's having another son. She knows she's about to die. She understands she's about to take her final breath. And in that moment of sorrow, in that moment when her life is fading, she decides to name her son, son of my sorrow. The challenge is this. Rachel is not the only one that is grieving. Jacob is grieving. He has spent 14 years plus of his life invested in this woman. He loves her. And though her sorrow may be for a moment, she is labeling her son something that will tag him for a lifetime. Just because you go through a moment of sorrow does not mean that you have to carry that label for the rest of your life. Whatever label has been placed on your life, you have the power to change the name of that thing. And so Jacob looked at that in that moment and said, I'm not going to allow this son to be called Ben-Oni, son of my sorrow. I am going to declare blessing and call him Benjamin, the strength of my right hand. Do you understand? In that moment, he had a decision to make. He could have allowed the enormity of the pain of that moment. Who am I speaking to today that cannot get beyond the pain of a moment in your life? Something happened. Something was done to you. And you've taken that label and carried it these many years, these months, these weeks. When you have the opportunity to say, I'm not going to allow that experience to label my life. I'm going to call it something else. We serve a God that Paul wrote about in Romans 4:17, that calls those things that are not as though they are. So Jacob was not willing to allow his son that was born to this woman that he loved to carry the stigma of the son of sorrow the rest of his life. He stood up and said, that's not going to be. I know this is a moment of sorrow. This is devastating. I am overwhelmed. The sweet bitterness of everything that's happening. A son is born, and yet his wife is passing away. He has a decision to make. Do I allow this moment to control the rest of my life, or do I change the name of it? I know there's been loss in this. It is emotionally devastating to me. I am struggling with this. I am overwhelmed by this, but I cannot allow this child to carry the label of the son of sorrow. I am going to shift this. I'm going to label it something else. It's not going to be a curse. It's going to be a blessing. It's not going to be an everlasting moment of despair. I'm going to call it something that's going to give that young man a future. I'm going to call his name Benjamin, son of my right hand. The right hand in the Bible was always significant of power, blessing, strength. You have the power to rename what you went through. Whatever in struggle or transition or overwhelming despair tried to label your life, you do not have to carry that label today. Why don't you name it something else? Have you ever been through circumstances in life that almost took you under, almost devastated you? As David said, my tears have been my meat day and night while my enemies say, where is your God? Have you ever been in that place where everything around you was constricting and you felt the pressure of the culture, the pressure of the moment, the pressure of the experience, the pressure of the circumstances? What did you do? Do you live with that? Do you take personal blame for everything? Do you look at it and say, no matter how difficult it is, something good is going to happen in my life because God works all things to my good? I remember a season in my life where I would go to my office and I felt like every nerve inside my body was on the outside. If anybody said anything to me, if anything happened, it was devastating. It overwhelmed you. I felt like when I sat down that there was a brick attached to every nerve. How do I get out of this? How do I deal with this? And in retrospect, no matter how overwhelming that moment in your life was, I wouldn't change it for anything because it transformed me. It changed me. I made the decision that God's going to bring something good out of that. You can be emotionally drained, but in that moment, you can have an experience with God and make a declaration that this experience is not going to label my life, but I'm going to take the label, I'm going to change it to give God glory and transform my life, and I'm going to be strong and not weak, but I need to encounter God. I need to have him interact with me so that when I get through this, I can take and carry other people through the flooding, overwhelming tide of a river that's about to blow them away. It is in that moment that he made that declaration and made that decision. If you don't like the names placed on you, then name it something else. That's what living for Jesus is all about. I don't know when he's coming, but I am sure there are things in our life that may transpire that could be overwhelming, that we didn't count on, that we did not see coming. Will we allow it to shake us from the lordship of Jesus Christ? Will we allow the labels and the names that people apply to us, direct our life, and determine our identity? Or will we take every area that we've struggled with or places where we have failed and use it as a launching pad for the strength of God? For Paul said, where sin did abound, grace did much more abound. Doesn't matter what you did, what you said, or what was forced upon you, God has a plan to circumvent that. Jacob had an experience. He was accustomed to renaming things in his life. And it's in the 32nd chapter of the book of Genesis, and I will just simply make a reference to it because Jacob is on the run. The last words he heard from Esau, his brother, was, when I see you again, I will kill you. How many of you know that calls for the need of a great security team? If somebody close to you says, I'm going to kill you, and he is a little bit of a conniver anyway, how many of you know that you would be a little apprehensive when you heard, hey, Esau is on the other side of Jabbok? So here's what happens. Jacob and his wives are making their way to Padanaram, and they cross one of the tributaries. In fact, it's the second largest tributary off the Jordan River, and in the 32nd chapter of Genesis, it's called Jabbok. We don't talk about Jabbok very much, but the term Jabbok means to empty out, a place of passing or a place of pouring out. So Jacob encamps on the other side of the bank of Jabbok. That night, he has an encounter with God, and he wrestles with who he thinks is an angel of God, but it is literally translated Elohim, or God himself. Do you know that there are moments in life where God will show up in your life and contend with you to see if you're serious about what you have declared and what you believe? I met Larry Lee. Some of you don't know Larry Lee. He wrote a book years ago called Could You Not Tarry 1 Hour, about prayer. And I sat down with him in Danville, Illinois. He was staying in the same hotel, and we began to have a conversation about experiences. And he pastored in Rockwall, Texas. He said there was an evening, Pastor Dave, that I went to the church and decided to pray. And as I prayed, I felt this evil presence come upon me. And I felt the wickedness of hell come against me and challenge me. Do you really believe what you're praying? Do you really believe what you're confessing? It was in that moment that I made the decision to pour out myself on the altar of God's intention and to stand strong and say to that fear that was trying to label my life that I would not be successful, that I would not overcome, that I would not accomplish the will of God. And he said, I stood in that moment and made a declaration, and it was in that moment it seemed as though all of heaven embraced me in that moment. Jacob is wrestling with God. His name means deceiver. He is dealing with the fear of Esau. He's having to meet Esau the next day. He has responsibilities. He has Rachel and Leah. He has children. He has been blessed. And now he's wrestling with God, and God says, what is your name? Do you know what he says? He says, I'm Jacob. My life has been labeled. I'm a deceiver. I'm a conniver. He, in that moment, is dealing with the frustration of where he is, of what he must face, of what he has done. And the colors of the sunrise begin to come over the top of the hills, and the angel of God says, you need to turn me loose now. Even though Jacob defined his life as a label that was placed upon him, he said to that angel of God, I will not let you go until you bless me. Do you understand there is something within the bosom of every heart today that wants to believe that God can do something great, that God can do something good? He knew in that moment of wrestling that what he was wrestling with had the ability to transform and do something different in his life. And he said, I'm not going to let you go until you bless me. Where is that tenacity in the church? Where is the tenacity that causes us to pursue God in prayer or worship in the Word until we receive what He has promised and what He has declared? If there is anything in the kingdom culture today, we give up too quickly. And when we confront a battle in our life, all of hell screams at us and says, you'll never be successful. You were told you were lazy, insecure, you're average. You came from a dysfunctional home. You've been through a marriage or two. You've lost this person in your life. You lost that mate in your life. And the enemy screams at you so that you will not wrestle with God and obtain what God says you can be, because God sees ahead while we're looking behind. What's your name? Jacob, deceiver. Here is the blessing. No longer are you going to be called Jacob. From now on, you will be called Israel, because you have fought with God and with men and have won. But nothing had changed yet. God is already proclaiming, you are the winner, but nothing has changed except a label. And then he says in verse 29, please tell me your name, Jacob said. Why do you want to know my name? The man replied. Then he blessed Jacob there. In other words, I'm redefining you. I'm changing the labels on your life. No longer are you a deceiver. No longer are you average. No longer are you fearful. No longer are you insecure. No longer are you the tail. I'm calling you the one who prevails with God. I'm calling you a winner and not a loser. I'm calling you the head and not the tail. And in that moment in verse 30, Jacob named the place Peniel, which means face of God. It was called Jabbok, the place of emptying out. And now he labels the place the face of God. How could he not rename that place when he encountered God and God blessed him and changed the label on his life? Remember what Dwayne Dyer said, every label that you embrace and receive and take as your own is a boundary that you will never cross. It is in that experience that Jacob and everything in his life turned around. Peniel, the face of God. What was intended to do harm in your life, what was intended to destroy you, what was intended to make you an emotional wreck, what was intended to demoralize you, to discourage you, God has the ability in that moment to shift it and redefine everything and take the label that was placed upon you and rip it off of you and go, I'm calling you something else. Call it something different. Rename this. That's why when Benjamin was born, he refused to call him the son of sorrow. Every morning when you get up, I challenge you to look in the mirror, no matter what's going on in your life, and go, I declare I am blessed and not cursed, not because of me, not because of any ability I have, but because of the greatness of my God. I have been fighting with a pinched nerve in my neck for 3 weeks. I finally told my chiropractor, if you don't help me, I'm going to gnaw my arm off. He said, well, you don't want to do that. No, but I'm close. Have you ever had a pain in your body? You wanted somebody to do something. Cut it off, cut it out, give me a drug, that whatever it is. Now, if I was still in the world, I know how to handle it. Oh, y'all not hear me. If I was still living in the world, there are a lot of avenues that I could have pursued. Last night was so bad, I finally said, God, I am going to make a strong declaration, and I'm going to make this declaration and declare I'm healed and not sick. Every ligament, every tendon, every part of the rotator cuff in my shoulder, every disc, every vertebrae, every pad, every nerve ending, whatever nerve is being pinched, you have the ability to loose it. I am not going to be dependent on some over-the-counter drug because they all have side effects that are enormous. You lose your hair, you gain weight, you get a rash. If this large growth comes on the side of your head, you probably should connect with a doctor, and eventually it can cause death. Well, that's the kind of thing I want to put in my body for an extended period of time. He was a good man, but he died from an overdose of ibuprofen. And I made my mind up. God, you're either the God of the Bible or you're not. I'm just talking to myself. Sometimes you have to encourage yourself as you pull the label off of you. Sometimes that can be hard. I got home from a procedure a couple weeks ago, and I felt something funny on my chest and my arms. They left the connectors, the sticky connectors that they use. They use super glue to put that on you to monitor your heartbeat. How many of you know that? You try to take it off, and you're screaming like a baby. And your wife doesn't know what's going on, you know. Then they remind you, I've had 7 kids, and you can't even pull that off your chest. You know how that conversation rolls. But there's wisdom in every challenge. So I went and found a razor blade, and slowly but sure. Anyway, I just started making declarations, and I said, God, you sent your word and healed me and delivered me of my pain. Lord, you said in your word that the Son of Righteousness shall arise with healing in its wings. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me. Bless his holy name. Bless the Lord, O my soul, who forgiveth all my iniquities and healeth all my diseases. And so I began to declare that. Isaiah said, He was wounded for our transgressions, bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon us. You see, we're living in a day when if you want to change the label on your life, you better be willing to commit to wrestle for a little bit and make a strong declaration. If you'll make a strong declaration of the word, something will shift. Something will change in your life. And in that moment, something began to shift. And normally when I lay down in bed, it starts giving me greater fits. The big challenge was when I get up in the morning. That's when I want to have my shoulder for breakfast. And I got up this morning and there's no pain there. And I'm going. And I'm wondering if God is embarrassed because I almost said I can't believe it. Because the Lord corrected me one day and said, don't ever say that. If you pray for something, don't get up and tell me you can't believe it. Why can't you believe it? And so maybe you've dealt with rejection and that whole rejection makes you feel like you're not qualified. Maybe the enemy believed that whatever you're going through or have gone through would stop you, but it only strengthened your resolve. Because remember, God's power is bigger than your past. Maybe you're insecure, but that can shift, and now your confidence in Christ is beginning to arise because you're willing to pursue God with adamant strength and motivation. Maybe somebody called you lazy. There's some days I feel lazy. Are there days that you've ever had a goal so big and you just hit that day where your stride was off and this thought comes into your mind, you're just lazy because it's not. You have to deal with that because there is an entity called the devil that wants to mark you. And once you receive that label, you'll never move beyond it. No, wait a minute, I'm going to stop right now. I am motivated by a call. I'm just taking a breath. I had a brain burp, but I'm going to move forward with strength and power and purpose and peace and passion. Maybe you're miserable today because of circumstances in your life. Nehemiah said, the joy of the Lord is your strength. Can I tell you today, you're not a cheater. You're not a failure. You're not a loser. You're forgiven. You're transformed. You're made new. You're healed. You're loved. You are an overcomer. Maybe you're going through a tough season today. God is conforming you into the image of Christ. Maybe you feel alone. It's in that moment you need to draw closer to Jesus. Maybe somewhere in your life you have failed, but failure is not failure if you got back up and you learned something from that. Let me leave this with you as our prayer partners come. You don't get to choose what comes into your life, but you do get to choose what you call it. You don't get to choose what comes into your life, but you do have the ability to choose what you call it. We made the decision that we were not going to call faith a retarded child. At best, she is challenged. And then my wife took and we put another label on her. Well, she's just our forever child for right now. So every day we declare, God, we're thankful that you're transforming her, that you're changing her. Now, this may not seem like much to you, but when I left the house the other day, I kissed Deb, and Faith began to have a, she just was upset because I didn't kiss her. She never acted that way before. My wife has, but she hasn't. You didn't hear that from me. I will deny any knowledge of anything that I've said. And so I reached over to kiss her, and she went, she's never done that. So every moment of progress, you begin to thank God for what's happening in your life. You don't have the ability to choose what comes into your life, but you do get to choose what you call it.
Thanks again for joining us. We hope you enjoyed today's message. Join us online every Sunday and Wednesday for our streaming services. You can also follow us on Twitter at New Life Sullivan or find us on Facebook at facebook.com/New Life Sullivan.